So Dr. Eric Crampton, Chief Economist with the New Zealand Initiative, is here to help. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
What on earth is this about?
Well, we all know that the pace of technological change is always increasing. It's even gotten a bit trite to say it, but regulation can hold things back. Tech, when it interacts with the real world, can only move as fast as the slowest thing slowing it down, right? So if regulation isn't keeping up with technological change, New Zealand will be starting to add a third tyranny to these traditional two, right? So we've got the tyranny of distance. We're far away from everything. We've got the tyranny of size. We're small, that makes us more nimble, but it also hurts. If our regulation doesn't keep up with tech change, so our firms can't adopt the stuff that's at the bleeding edge and consumers don't have access to it, then we're also going to have a tyranny of time where we're falling behind everybody else in the world, and we can't afford that given the other two tyrannies.
I think I understand the concept. Technology's moving quickly. We're using it more and more in our daily lives and in business, importantly, but regulation isn't keeping speed with that. What type of regulations are we talking about here? What are the key ones?
Well, there's some areas where we have done really well, so it's nice to highlight successes first. Rocket Lab, big success. When Rocket Lab came to the government with a proposal to launch rockets into outer space and send up satellites from New Zealand, the Ministry of Business, MB, they moved really fast to make it happen. They set the rules that could let it happen really flexibly, so it was a really permissive approach. They knew that they wouldn't be able to set up the framework quite as fast as Rocket Lab might like, so they said, okay, you can operate under contract where if you've got rocket launch authorizations from the U.S., that'll be good enough for here. And that's the kind of approach we need to be thinking about more, where if there are things that are good enough for other jurisdictions that we trust, if we haven't come up with the rules to make it work here yet, we should be more flexible in allowing things to happen here if they've been good enough for other places that we really trust.
But then we run into issues around sovereignty, surely.
Well, we can always come up with our own regimes, but denying New Zealand consumers access to things because we haven't had time to sort it out yet. And small countries, we've only got fixed amounts of resource we can devote to this sort of thing.
So give me some examples of areas where we're not keeping pace with technology.
Well, I think that we've had a bit of confusion around online streaming and the regulation around that. For a little while, the OFLC and the classifications office was trying to argue that anybody that was putting up a streaming service like Netflix or Lightbox would have to get all content cleared through New Zealand certification. So instead of just carrying an American or an Australian certification, they'd have to run it through their office to get a New Zealand one as well. They've since stepped back from that, but it cost Lightbox when they're setting up over $100,000. To get content certified. Now, a company with enough backing like Lightbox had could deal with that. Small startups, maybe not so much. And if they wind up trying to shunt all of the streaming services through the Broadcast Standards Authority, which is one of the proposals that's floating around, I'm not sure that many of the foreign streaming services would have a bar of it.
They wouldn't bother, would they? It'd cost too high.
And our market isn't big enough to impose those kinds of costs on other companies. So we need to make sure that we're at least striving towards a principle that they've adopted more in the U.S. that's basically permissionless innovation, that unless there's real risk of real harm, the default should be that you're just allowed to do things rather than having to find somebody who will give you explicit permission to do things.
Well, I wonder, do you have to do that? I mean, let's take the example that you've given there about the online streaming. If there are no regulations around it in the first place, why not just do it and then, explain later?
Well, that's the approach that Uber took, right? So the regulations there were a little bit opaque when Uber started, that whether they would be counted as a taxi cab company or a private hire company, because there are different rules that apply to both. Uber just came in and did its own thing, and that ended up forcing the regulatory change where we now have an environment that's a lot more permissive. It's still not perfect, but at least now the costs of getting a P-endorsed license are fractions of what they used to be, so it's a lot more open. And I don't think that would have happened unless Uber had just charged in and done it, right? And it made a lot of people mad, but we wound up with a better regulatory environment because of it.
17 minutes away from 5, Dr. Eric Crampton from the Chief Economist with the New Zealand Initiative talking to me about a new report out today, the relationship between regulation and advancing technology. And I've got my head around it now, which is good. So tell me what we should do. What should the government be doing now that they aren't already doing to ensure that when new technologies pop up and there are new trends emerging, that they're keeping pace, the regulation is keeping pace with the change?
Well, one thing we should be doing is when new regulation is promoted, the regulatory impact statement should be giving an assessment of whether there are foreign jurisdictions that compliance with which would be good enough for New Zealand purposes. They should probably be doing that already. It'd be nice to have that codified as a standing item that they should always be reporting on, which other country standards are good enough for here so that we wouldn't have to have people reinventing wheels all the time. We should also be looking again at our anti-money laundering legislation to make sure that the costs that we're imposing are proportionate to the risks. If we think back to just a couple of years ago, we had iPredict, which was a beautiful little real money prediction market where there's hardly any risk really involved with it. You had maybe $200,000 that was invested in the thing, and you got some really interesting data out on what was going to happen in the next election and a bunch of other political events. When the government established that under Labor, just before the 2008 election, they took a really permissive approach and found some flexible rules that would make the whole thing work, and they got it done. When the anti-money laundering legislation came in, as far as iPredict was concerned, when they were setting up, one of the academics that was involved, Glenn Boyle, he'd said, well, AML, that's not something that we're going to have to worry about, really, unless the Americans invade or the communists take over. It was just so far from being a real risk that it wasn't something they were worried about. Then they ended up being shut down by it because the government was looking to be imposing
costs
that would be way too high for a really small outfit, right? All of these kinds of costs, if you're setting up regulatory frameworks to meet sort of international spec, where international spec often deals with really big companies instead of the kind of small firms that are present in New Zealand, you're going to end up doing a lot of harm to small firms in New Zealand.
Yeah, fair enough. Casting the net too wide.